Do you know what the throne of scone is?
Yes, Bob, you know what it is?
What?
It is the kitchen of Ina Garten and the Barefoot Contessa.
What book are they in?
Not a book. In the Hamptons, it's a bakery. It's called Barefoot Contessa. And the throne of scone is Ina Garten.
Why is she the throne of scone?
Because she's made more scones than any other person on the planet.
What's a scone, Carolyn?
It's like a biscuit, Bob. Pastry.
More biscuity than pastry.
The throne of scone. I think it means scone is a place in Scotland.
Yeah, we understand, but we couldn't resist that.
Okay, maybe it's the stone of scone. Okay, the stone of scone, also commonly known as the stone of destiny or the coronation stone, it's an oblong block of red sandstone used for centuries in the coronation of the monarchs of Scotland, the monarchs of England, and more recently British monarchs. Historically, the artifact was kept at the now ruined Scone Abbey in Scone near Perth, Scotland. Other names by which it has sometimes been known include Jacob's Pillow Stone and the Tanis Stone. Its size is about 26 inches, 660 millimeters by 425 millimeters by 270 millimeters in size and weighs approximately 336 pounds. The top bears chisel marks. At each end of the stone is an iron ring, apparently intended to make transport easier. Okay, so this stone, some people, Christians, believe that this came from way back there. Joseph, maybe, or somebody.
Pre-Joseph. Did go back to Methuselah. Cain's son, Methuselah.
They say that this is a stone of destiny and that the Pope is trying to get it from Scotland.
He's trying to keep the pedophiles back. He ain't worried about the stone of destiny, for Pete's sake.
Some people think the stone of destiny is very important in the future unfolding of the Second Coming.
No, having a Pope that was actually a priest is very important.
That is celibate, you mean?
No, that actually served in a church.
Having a Pope that actually served in the church is important.
Yeah, that's more important than the Stone of Destiny.
Did the present Pope serve in the church?
15 months out of all of his life.
What did he do the rest of the time?
Worked in the bookshop. He took the scholarly road. He did not serve a parish.
I see. Yes, that's right. He was the Office of Propaganda guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Stone of Scone, some people think it's very significant. So what is the Stone of Scone?
Okay, we got to go back. You didn't want the real version. Mesopotamia. Picture it.
The stone in Scotland goes that far back.
It does.
And it's in Mesopotamia. Before Moses and the pyramids?
Way before.
What would be the last recorded event?
The flood.
So it was before the flood?
Both of them.
There are two stones?
Two floods.
That's pretty close to the Garden of Eden?
Some would say before the Garden of Eden. Depends on your point, see? Because you got Dagon, you got all these other...
What's Dagon?
A god, a grain god.
So it goes way back. And who carried it forward?
Imhotep.
The Egyptians got it.
Well, their god got it.
Well, that Imhotep is the god.
Yeah.
Was he a human flesh person?
No. He's the devil god.
What did he consist of, if not flesh and bone?
He was like a head of a dog and the body of a man.
And that's actually a form that was around.
Yeah.
Is that shortly after Methuselah?
Right after Ernest Borgnine.
No. Okay, you're not gonna. Oh. We're not gonna do the chronology anymore. You just.
Well, no, we had to be cheeky because the people walk around now with heads of dogs, and the Jimmy Durante nose and all that kind of stuff. So not too far off of that when you're talking about anything that's outside of the abject norm, as far as facial features are. That's why we had to make that rationalization.
You're saying the actual dog man, whatever you're talking about, it looked quite human. It wasn't that distorted.
Well,
what about the big statue in Laos? That's like a dog head and a...
That is exactly the same one. They copied it.
Wow, okay.
And then it got changed and turned into Horus.
What that statue shows walked around on the planet. It was a form created by humans.
Okay.
It was a form created by something.
Okay.
That walked around. It was a real form. I could meet him on the street. Meet him tomorrow if I wanted to.
Sure.
Okay, the Stone of Scone, why was it carried by Imhotep and other people through the ages? Was there something special about it? Was it a portal activator or something?
No, it was a concealer.
You could conceal things inside it?
No. If you had the Stone of Scone, you could make very large objects be invisible.
It zapped things, made other things disappear.
Not really disappear, but make them invisible, yes. And actually how it works is it makes things indivisible. Because remember, you got duality. And this was that place where people can't see things that are right before their eyes. This object is what brought that dynamic into the gaze of the human creator.
It made the gaze not see things.
That's correct. And Carolyn's going, wow. And she's stuffing salad and having great fun. But all of a sudden she's like, wow, okay. That's where that began. So before that, everyone saw everything. And we say, yes, Carolyn, that is exactly correct.
You mean all levels?
Every level, every degree, every heaven.
Sounds like this stone is like the Ark of the Covenant creating a veil on the perceptual level earlier.
Perfect.
Humans had to create this power in it.
What do you mean? They imbued, just like they do anything, they imbued it.
That's what I meant. They imbued the thing with power to do this.
Well, except it didn't come originally from what you call this world.
So we had this thing that alters people's perception, and it was brought from another world.
Okay.
Who brought it here?
With all what you call the mystery landscape, stones, artifacts, pearls, all these capstones, all these significantly retro different worlds.
Artifacts.
Well, we said archetype. You can have an artifact that isn't a capstone or a what we call a PowerPoint. You can have a box overlaid with gold, and you can imbue that box like the Ark of the Covenant. You see, the Ark of the Covenant came from here and was imbued by the human creators. Not everything did. These particular stones that you're referring to were pure renditions of millions of years in the what you call future that were at the lowest common denominator placed in your referenced past, so that that power then gets stronger as it
is
evolves.
As imbued by humans, as it is imbued by humans.
Well, but see, if you never heard of the Barefoot Contessa, you may not imbue that scone with very much power. But now that you have, yes, certainly. But there's millions who have no clue that this is and has no inference. If they had it in their house, it wouldn't do them any good.
It was evolving on its own.
Well, that's the trick. Because from your future into your past, it has evolved already. But you got to make sure that it's at the lowest common denominator. For example, you couldn't take a looky box from the future and plant the looky box in the past because they wouldn't know how to turn it on. So in like your technology that you think is evolving, coming into play, getting better, 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 no. All that's happening is you're figuring out what's in your past to make your now more tactile through your technology. Tactile technology. Well, that'd be the same description of this stone, wouldn't it?
The stone is a tactile technology?
Absolutely. It has more power than you know. So therefore, you use it ceremonially to, you know, have the moil cut off the end of the penis and make sure it's present when they're going to have artifacts in general.
Most empires require artifacts or are assisted by are created by artifacts or helped.
Can be. But I see that works both ways. You can take a crystal liquor and have them lick a dirty rock and feel better. Well, if that works, then get a great big one and lick it continuously. But then if you go on with that, you can find the right rock that will indeed make a difference, not from your intention. It's that hapless manifestation that is, but it came from the future to be placed in the past for you to bump into your now. That's why mint tastes like mint. Mint tastes like mint whether you know what mint tastes like or not. Now, that's interesting because that's one of the few anomalies, okay? Basil only tastes like basil after you imbue it with power. But mint is mint whether you believe it or not.
Why is that? Basil isn't.
The base of mint is very different than the base of basil. And the reason it is because the way it so flourishes. You have one sprig of mint and you'll cover 12 acres in a minute. That's because the essence of mint doesn't come from this world. Mm. Like your skip of scone. Very good and tricky place you're in.
I know, so I need to digress. Ion is always referring, at least the last month or two, not to the Tudors, though that gets mentioned occasionally, the Plantagenet. You say Plantagenistically speaking, they're the guys before the Tudors.
They are the essence of that which was lost. That's where the Pendragons came from.
And the Pendragons are the Tudors?
No, the Pendragons came way before the Tudors, Bob.
And the Pendragons came from the Plantagenets.
The Plantagenets came from the Pendragons.
And the Pendragons are humans who are royalty or a tribe.
Yeah, that's the Arthur and
okay.
The Monopoly Group stuff.
The medieval period when there was no manuscripts and visual space.
Right. Almost before you took over the Illuminati.
Yeah.
Or about the same time. Yeah,
so that's interesting. Never got that. You've mentioned the Pendragon. So that's a good beginning point, because did the Pendragons know about the Stone of Scone?
They absolutely did. They ushered them, and now you understand their entire realm, what Kennedy called Camelot. Their entire Camelot, they had a bewitched and a bewitching experience in that world. But the Pendragon, Uther, that's Arthur's daddy, Uther, eliminated all magical power or sorcery. Now, that's not the correct word that you use today, but what it meant back then was sorcery of seeking power outside yourself.
Seeking power,
that's why it fell. That time and for JFK.
Right, seeking power outside yourself.
See, they were trying to eliminate all things spiritual.
Seeking power outside of yourself sounds like you're denying you're a god, but you don't mean it that way.
No, Luther was saying every bad thing that ever befell us was because of sorcery and magic and black magic and magic and herbs and spices. And
was that put in a Christian context?
It came from the Samaritan dynamic of reverencing powers that have been made manifest on the earth. We didn't say by whom, did
right.
we? Notice that little hole there? Because there's a great big hole that you're going to fall into later that we just want to let you know is there, but we ain't going that far right this second because that'll undo what you're asking.
Hey, Cal, note this. This is the way our life unfolded. I hear about a topic by a bunch of fundamentalist Christians, and I bring it up, and it stumbles into what we already were talking about and fitting into, and so I accidentally find the next step.
Mm-hmm.
This is like planting stuff in the past, and then, I don't know, I just noticed this process. It's very fluid how I brought this obscure topic or silly topic up on the surface, and it fits into what we're going to talk about anyways, maybe.
Well, of course, it was all about Ina Garten anyway, Bob.
we'll get to that. I don't know why the little store in the Hamptons has anything to do with this, but we'll...
That's the throne of scone. That's what that's about.
Okay. So we have the mythology of Moses, the mythology of Arthur and the Camelot. Both represent and attract the human mind because so much of significance happened in these areas.
Mythology?
Yeah, we know it's real, but I mean just the whole archetypal mumbling about Moses and the mumbling about King Arthur by humans. Those regions are mumbled about because there's a lot of interesting things went on there.
Just because they don't know where Excalibur is doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
When we say that Plantagenet, everything was lost, is King John 1200, is he the Plantagenet?
No, the Plantagenets were before John.
Okay, I'm going to look that up to see where the...
Where they say they begin.
Yeah.
But if you get much before John, you're going to lose surnames. It was all titles.
Surnames is the last name, so John...
Tudor, Windsor, son of a bitch, Alabaster, son of a bitchy.
Did King John have a surname?
He did, so that's what I'm saying, that some of this was before that.
This is before having surnames, so what were the names if they're not surnames?
How they're known, they're titles.
What's an example of a title?
Duke of York. Your last name is York, but you're the Duke of York, so that's what your name is.
Right, and you don't know who they don't even have a name, so to speak.
That precisely.
Okay, so the House of Plantagenet, branch of the Anjou, was a royal house founded by Geoffrey V of Anjou, father of Henry II of England. Would you agree with that?
Close.
So that would be the 12th century.
That's what I'm saying. Before John.
So John comes out of that.
He is a product of that. That is correct, because that's where the family that was trying to take over Henry VIII, that he had every one of them, he lopped their damn heads off, every last one of them, because if something were to happen to the Tudor realm, they would be in line. They are where it is essenced from. Sarah, the Duchess of... Gobbledygook, you know what I mean? They kept changing it. Well, she was sort of the fat one that was just waiting on Henry to catch syphilis and die.
Yeah, you're saying that the Plantagenets were waiting in the wings.
You better believe it. Duke of Gloucestershire.
You look up Pendragons, Pendragons, there doesn't seem to be any reference.
Because that's the English version of that.
What's the English version?
Pendragon is the name that the English translation would be.
Of what?
Of Arthur Pendragon.
Pendragons refer to Camelot.
Uther Pendragon. It was his surname or his crest, Pendragon. Uther was Arthur's daddy.
Yeah, he's a legendary king of sub-Roman Britain and the father of King Arthur. There's a picture of him. So what would be sub-Roman Britain? That would be after Rome?
No, sub would be a portion of what the empire reigned from. That's why we said that these artifacts were coming from Mesopotamia and Samaria, because all those different things were, that's what Rome stood against. Remember Babylon? And that's where we have such fun playing with you, because you try to fit it into this trajectory of time, and it doesn't fit. And it's so nonsensical for us, because this was before that, that was after this, and this is between that. And
right, so you can bring in on Ernest Borgnine. So,
yeah, and it fits as well as anything else that you're dabbling with, but only to be not cheeky, but to try to let you get a grasp that these dynamics that are linear are not linear.
So what you're saying is we can talk about the Tudors, the Pendragons, the Romans, the Babylonians.
All the way through.
Because they're now. They are now.
Yes, and can tell you who begat whom, but when you start wondering of which came first, we've got a problem.
Okay, so we're just going to deal with nouns, so to speak.
That's perfect. When we can do that.
There are many nouns that register events, like there are the Pendragons, there are the Tudors, they're all immortal, so they're all here, they're all resonating, and you can tap into their thread lines, I guess.
Of course. Lines, plural. Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's exciting to think that it's interesting to know about everything because they're all existing.
Yes, because there is not this linear projection. Humans add a linear projection. I guess the only thing we push against them in the world is time.
I think that's where it's more useful to talk about the effect of literacy. That's what time is. Well, it's an effect of writing and literacy.
Not the writing, the syncing up of orchestrated thoughts.
By writing.
Yeah. Synced it up. Once it's in black and white, it's over.
That is what we're protesting. So that's why you're similar to Joyce and McLuhan on that point in saying, look at the effect of this writing medium you use.
We could have the same conversation about the perils of methamphetamines, okay? Nothing good comes from methamphetamines. Well, time is about like crack.
No, but it's the printing press. As a matter of fact, this would explain partly why ION shows up to me, because I'm an expert on this media effect, and I understand why you would say literacy, printing press, causes this point.
Absolutely, because it only distracts and limits. So now even your technology is limited to the inference and the reference from the archetypal meme that's been crammed down everybody's throat. So if you don't typey righty, then you don't doey.
I was thinking that maybe, since you've got everybody all worked up trying to overcome time, not use the word, it's a bad term, bad thing, maybe for a while you might say, you're all fooled by the effect of writing in the printing press. Say that instead of time, and that might loosen up their...
That's what we got you for, Bob.
Oh, okay. So you would agree with it when I do it. You don't object. And you have
to agree. Get rid of them. Nobody cared about a book when they started burning them.
McLuhan didn't want to say anything was bad, so he said the book is a fun experience, but it just we should see the effects of it. So we can play with books as long as we know how trivial they are, in a sense.
That's correct, because then even the syntax of how the book is written is how it's judged, whether it's Pulitzer Prize material or not.
Me looking at the history of sub-Roman Britain, I start reading across and reading details. That actually erases the point that sub-Roman Britain is happening right now. And a lot of interesting things in that world are still happening and might be influencing Obama, so to speak.
Well, from the Second Empire, yes.
The Second Empire, that's an empire? Empire?
Yeah, Second Empire.
What events are associated with the Second Empire?
The Roman Empire.
Oh, it's called the Second, okay. Second.
Well, because that's right. They said they were the first. They were the only. Well, they weren't, and they knew that because they had to come from. So that actually, the Carthians, you get all the way down to Turkey, you see, you can go all the way to the Byzantine side, and that is certainly a part of it, but it's a completely different thread.
So are those people that lived and transitioned from those eras, they are immortal, they're watching us, they're engaged with us, right?
Some of those in old references that you were just describing certainly came from future expressions.
Well, that's a good point. Let's just hold that. Yeah, I'm thinking that they're back there and lived then and now just hanging around observing. But no, they were projections from other times. And so we may have not met them fully yet.
And sometimes they are lost for a moment, and then all of a sudden they're right back. They disappear, there is none, and then all of a sudden they're back. And that was like they were all along.
Because they were projected from a future that we frequency-wise align with, so therefore there they are.
And then you got these stones that can avert your field of view. Now look at view, the word view. A view is what you gaze at. A view can be a point of. A view can also be a negative, confrontational protraction of
an opinion.
Well, we didn't want to go that far, but yeah. And that's all view. Well, that's our view, and that's our view. Mm-hmm. Well, but see, that's our view. That means it's limited. If someone's escaped your gaze, then they have now eluded your view. So if you use it that way, okay, fine. But now, we agree with you that it's just silly that the Gutenbergs got up this little typey typeset, tippity type type, two type.
you sometimes say there was a particular reason. It was to sell the indulgences, or was there another reason?
It was the reason to sell the indulgences, but it became so much more static from the monks writing it out by rote.
The indulgence was during the panic period of the Black Death, right, in the plague?
Yeah. And it's like, you know.
That's why they brought in. They were panicking within the dying.
Yes, but that was even done through what you call silk screening, where they would do a negative with the wax, and then they would rub it over the papyrus with the ink.
Is that China, or did that happen in Europe, too?
It happened in Europe, too, before they had the typeset, removable typeset. Then they had to carve the actual thing, the negative, to use to ink over with paper in reverse to print on the paper. Original Bibles were that way.
So phatic. How do you mean phatic?
Phatic meaning that the reference that we were using phatically.
It means it becomes a cliche, right?
It becomes a cliche because, think about it, how glib is this, Bob, to have the printed word, a printing press that has interchangeable typeset? Think about that.
Yeah.
If it's set in stone that this is what you get every single time when you run this press, and now you've made typeset change so it never comes out the same, you've kind of set a meme that is always now undoable. So now you've just created the unperpetuated, unsubstantiatable meme that has carried you all the way through this bliss or oblivion that you call the printed word or the
Gutenberg era.
Well, it's beyond that because you even judge your parameter by the inflection that you add to words that are written in stone for what they mean, and we've spent more time than anything else going over what your words mean that you're using to gauge your view based on the words, and then you find out that everybody's running around scared of the Armageddon, and then you find out that that's the most wonderful thing that could ever happen because it just means the thinning of the veil. Well, now we ask you lovingly, kindly, what the fuck were you thinking that you never bothered to look up what the word meant, and yet everybody in the world's using it, making movies about it, and running scared of it, and building devils in hell to hold all the crew? Well, what's up with that?
That's the power of our creativity.
No, it is not. It is the power of your regulated, interchangeable printing press.
Which we created, but now you're going into the characteristics and features of it.
Well, exactly. That's why it doesn't make any sense.
McLuhan used to point out that literate man tries to be firm, but can't hold it. And you just brought up an interesting point. The printing press solidifies the book it makes, but then it can make another book. So change
that's
is
right.
Applied.
Yes, and if the written word is written in stone, then what's up with that?
The stone factor disappears.
And now when the stone factor disappears, so does the value of the words.
It's interesting. We're talking about the stone of scone. That's a mighty answer to the changing flux of the printing era.
Interflux. Now, some call that a flux capacitor.
That's used in modern electronics, that term?
Yeah.
Flux capacitor.
It says here, Urban Dictionary, flux capacitor, an invention conceived by Dr. Emmett L. Brown on November 5th, 1955, which makes time travel possible, was the core component of Dr. Emmett Brown's time-traveling DeLorean time machine. So you've got here, Ion's making a big point about history, he throws in a fictional term.
Yeah, and then you just said, oh, is that a scientific thing? He goes, yes, Bob. And you can tell, like, it placated you, but he was totally evil.
Is that right? Yes, Bob.
Oh, yeah, or the Ion 5 voice. Yeah, that was just like, haha, yes, Bob, someone someday is going to fuck with you about that. So good.
So we continue about the scones. Stone of scone.
The damn elude Forbes who combs the planet for everyone.
Because it means they stay invisible. They don't allow their amount to be known.
So that's why you're artifact then becomes very handy if you're trying to give an illusion beyond your place of power.
You have a place of power, and you say you use the artifact to distract from the fact you've got all the power. Is that what you're saying?
That's what they
They use a stone to make you think that's the source of power.
That and not their source of power.
So the whole thing about the scone is interesting, but I should ignore it because it's got nothing to do with me taking my power.
Very delicious if you want to use the scone.
Use it to distract people?
Elude the visible, yes. Indivisible, yes.
No, you said elude the visible?
Yes.
Elude the visible and delude the invisible. You know, you said something, but you're not repeating it.
Indivisible.
Indivisible. What's the verb before? Elude the visible and something the indivisible.
Makes control of the power indivisible. All the power then looks like it's coming from this hunk of rock. Well, it's indivisible because of the actual powers with the human creator.
Why do you bring in the word indivisible? What's indivisible?
Because it's indivisible, indistinguishable between the power that comes from the crystal that you're licking.
And the individual.
Yes.
It's indivisible, but the individual makes sure you don't know that because it gets you looking over there and not at the individual.
Many times, perfect, yes. If that's your desire, perfect, no problem.
The relationship between you and the stone is indivisible if you can get people thinking the stone is the source of the power.